we're live. Nope. Someone else had a topic that's lost to the wind. We'll never know. They're on the Freedom of Dreams. Who's doing the intro?
Estos son los Freedom Fiends transmitiendo desde Podbay 2 a un kilómetro de altura sobre el nivel del mar en los estudios intergalácticos de La Pradera. Alteramos tu locus cerúleo calentando tus sinapsis con rejuvenecedoras ondas de radio. Esto calienta tu cerebro en unos sabrosos y tostaditos 365 grados, manteniendo la avalancha de estatismo fuera de tu cabeza. Lo sienten. Can you feel it, Michael?
Yes.
Can you feel it, MK?
Damn. Amen.
Yes.
Amen.
Woo. And Dan?
Yeah.
Is Dan there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Speak up, Dan. I know it's like, oh, dark 40 in the morning at in Scotland. But so we got Scotland, we got Florida, and we got Mexico City, and we got Wyoming. This is
amazing.
Most international show. And it's brought to you by Fiend Phone from fiendphone.com, which is a licensed BIPCOT, no government license, as is this show, which allows reuse by anyone except government. So people are wondering, why I'm on 2 days in a row. How'd this happen? What is this miracle that Michael's not dying right now? So I've been sick with asthma for I'll recap this. I said this yesterday, but basically I'm on all these medications for asthma. I've had like chronic, like life-threatening asthma since January. And you know, quit smoking, quit vaping, changed everything, changed like my diet, got, you know, found out what foods I'm allergic to, cut out those foods, took out all the rugs in our house, had a landscaper rip out the garden in the back to get rid of the pollen and just like pave it over with pea gravel, got rid of the cats, which was like, that was harder than kicking heroin for me, literally. Like, it's been a month and a half now, it's been like 3 months almost, and 3 months off heroin, I was like dancing in the streets, and 3 months off cats, I'm just missing cats. The other day, this cat jumped over our fence into our backyard and jumped up on the windowsill and tried to get in our house. Like, I know you need a cat. This is what's so weird, man. I know. And it's a cat. It's a cat that used to come around the house and like sniff the front door because he knew there were cats in here. And I think he knows now there's not cats in here. He was offering the services.
He wants to fill that cat void.
He's a stray, and he wants. Yeah, it broke my heart, man. So, I'm, you know, cat free for 3 months, and but I've been like really sick with asthma. Like, no matter what medication they throw at me, the doctor's like, you know, you should be manageable by now. This is not you're an extraordinary patient, and not in a good way. You know, like this should be fixed by now. So she said I had to like start cutting things out. Like, you know, I had to like switch to organic fabric softener. I had like, you know, put pillow covers on all my pillows. I had like replace this with, you know, allergy free that and, you know, fabrics and like, then I had to start going through food and like, even though I'm not allergic to milk, I cut out milk for a week just to see, maybe it was the hormones in milk or something, but nope, wasn't it. Cut out nuts for a week. Wasn't that, you know, cut out something else for like, cut out GMOs and gluten for a week. It was not that. I cut out coffee. The next day I started feeling better. And I've been off coffee for 6 days now. And I'm the healthiest I've been in since January. And I'm not getting too hopeful, you know, but I think it might have been, I'm not allergic to coffee. I had the scratch test for it, but I think I'm allergic to the pesticides. There's a lot of pesticides used in coffee, so I'm going to try organic coffee. And I'm also like getting off of those steroid pills that I've been on for a long time, which are not good for you, and it's good to get off them. So I'm weaning off of those. I am hopeful. I think things might be looking up. So there.
Well, you're sounding a lot better, so.
Although I'm sounding hoarse by the end of that.
Yeah, but you sound strong. You have a stronger voice now.
Louder.
And you used to have a lot of coffee, didn't you?
Yeah, but I'm taking caffeine pills. I'm taking Dodos to substitute my coffee. But I just ordered some certified organic coffee on Amazon. So, because you can't buy that stuff in my town. It's like there's a health food store here that doesn't even have like that, you know. So I want to use my strength to battle one of the demons of liberty. Stefan Molyneux. So I haven't talked about this guy in like 6-8 months. Long time. He is, okay, for those who don't know, for the radio audience, can someone explain the twisted, dark anti-majesty that is Stefan Molyneux, please?
He's an internet philosopher that the world has never seen the likes of for about 2,500 years, according to him.
He said that without him, the world would have to wait 2,500 more years for redemption or for perfection.
He's the anarcho-capitalist messiah.
Yeah.
Or so
he's an atheist who runs a cult where people worship him, basically.
Well.
But he has actually, like, told people to leave their family. And in public, he says that, you know, it's only if they're really abusive family and only after going to counseling. And in private, that's not true. He tells a much wider group of people to leave their family. And so here's the thing that's pretty neat that came out was Joe Rogan, this famous internet, talk show host and celebrity kind of guy, big audience, interviewed Molyneux 9 months ago, something like that. And Molyneux just lied, straight up lied about several things on the show. And Joe Rogan finally got around to addressing it by having this guy, Steve Hassan, come on and talk about cults and mind control. And a couple days ago, this episode came out with Steve Hassan, who is one of the foremost, if not the foremost, cult expert. Like, not deprogramming, that's not the word anymore. They don't kidnap people anymore. It's called exit strategy or exit consulting. You know, he's an exit consultor for cults. He's a, you know, licensed mental health counselor, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, an author. He used to be a member of the Moonies, the Unification Church. That's his backstory. And in 1979, he left and started counseling people on getting out of cults. And he went on Joe Rogan. I'm going to link this in the show notes. It starts about an hour and 40 minutes into this 2.5-hour podcast. He talks for like 40 minutes about Molyneux and how he's running a cult. He calls him a mind control agent. He kind of underplays this, but he basically says, implies that he knows for a fact that Molyneux is like getting people to sign their trust funds over to him, which is pretty bizarre.
Strange.
Yeah. So Hugo, did you listen to this thing?
Yeah, I did listen to it. And well, he outright went and said Stefan's project, which is called Freedom and Radio, is a cult. And yeah. One of the things I did not like, though, was since he's not a liberty-minded person or an anarchist or anything, either, I don't know if Joe Rogan is, but the expert in cults is not. So he was conflating some of the things that Molyneux said about government and about liberty with, you know, crazy cook talk about...
Yeah, and that's one of the problems with Molyneux.
Culty things.
Is that he's the face of anarcho-capitalism and libertarianism to a lot of the uninitiated in the world. Joe Rogan agreed with him on one thing too. Joe Rogan basically said, "Yeah, without the government, who would build the roads?" It blew my mind because Joe Rogan,
yeah,
when asked, says he is a libertarian. Like, he uses that term on himself, but that was a pretty weak libertarian sauce thing to say.
Yeah, and I think one of the worst thing that Stefan has done is getting into people's iPods and podcast habits by talking about liberty, talking about things that have been written about and talked about for, I don't know, 30 years, and things are pretty solid. And then suddenly he starts spouting out his own opinions into the mix. And sometimes those are, remember the one where he was saying that women who wear makeup are basically liars and cheaters?
Yeah, so I actually made a satire video about that. But yeah, it's a really bizarre thing. He hates women, and it kind of seems like he hates... Or he's starting to love cops and, I don't know, hate black people or something like that. He's been defending a lot of these police shootings, and that's pretty unsettling for someone who proclaims to be an anarchist.
Yeah, he's not even an anti-statist anymore. You know, a lot of people have a theory that basically he's just trying to appeal to the lowest common denominator. I mean, I think he's also realized that, like, Liberty people don't have a lot of money, and he's already sucked out most of it. You know,
well, MRAs do have a lot of money, though, which is why I think he's shifting his kind of,
unless
you
they're
know,
divorced,
gaze.
Unless they're MRAs because they're divorced and paying three alimonies.
Well, I've heard a voice from men does pretty well off of those poor divorced men. But I don't think they're that downtrodden. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a kind of growing market, and there's a lot of support for some of the strange ideas coming out of it. But yeah, I think Molyneux is an opportunist. I mean, I think he's just trying to shift his narrative to whatever niche market that's kind of growing more, and I think he's realized, yeah, libertarians don't have a lot of money, so yeah. A few of them do, but they're not donating to him, you know. Yeah. Now, he did manage to swipe a lot of Bitcoin from people, unfortunately, but or fortunately for him, I guess. But
yeah, from the get-go, he has his wallet received about $300.
It was about $130,000worth in that one account. Maybe he lost the
keys. He moved some.
He's afraid to tell anybody.
He moved some, and but yeah, that one address received over $300,000 worth of Bitcoin at one point.
He forgot his password, and it's all gone now.
Well, that happened to him earlier on. I remember. I've been listening to him forever since probably 2006 or 2007. So I've listened to a lot of Molyneux in my day. So he became more cautious after. He had the son of some politically connected lady somewhere. She was a council member or something.
That's Barbara Weed.
He left her. So he left his mother. So there was a hitty food. That's how they call it.
Yeah, there's an article in a big paper, the UK Guardian, which is like the biggest paper in England, I think. So there was a big article about that. And yeah, she follows me on Twitter and retweets a lot of stuff that I do about Molyneux. Also, she retweets a lot of other stuff, which is pretty cool because she's a Labour Party politician, you know, liberal. But she likes the fiends, even when we're not talking about Molyneux, which is kind of cool.
Worms. Yep.
All right. We're back after this trip to the market.
Yo! Yeah.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. Coming back. Here with Dan Green and Hugo. How are you guys?
Doing all right. South of the fiends out of the border. It's
all right.
Reasonably warm here, though rainy.
Nice. International Fiends episode. So we were talking about cult leaders and stuff in the last segment, and I don't know, that's kind of bumming me out. So I want to talk about happier stuff now.
This is what it means. In the glossary, I think there's this phrase, the rainbow chaser.
Yeah.
The rainbow chaser after talking about cults and drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, and I love rainbows. So, oh my God, they're my favorite. I am a rainbow chaser. Like, oh my God, that's great. So I have some good news, and I've actually had to keep it a secret for a few weeks, and it's been really hard. So I'm really good at keeping other people's secrets, but I'm really bad at keeping secrets about myself that are like good news. And so my good news is that I just got this job at this organization called Airbits, and they are a Bitcoin platform that they're totally decentralized, and they actually, they've been doing some really, really cool stuff in the Bitcoin space. And one of those things is they sent the first transaction, or their app was used to send the first Bitcoin transaction to Cuba from the U.S.
That's really, really, really good news for Cubans in general. You know, there's been some help with the relationship, some improvement with relationships between Cuba and the U.S. recently, and I don't think probably that's not at all good for the population in Cuba. But Bitcoin is. I mean, if the government wants, the U.S. government, the Cuban government want to become closer, I don't think that's a good thing. But with whatever additional freedom they can get, that's a good thing, and Bitcoin is part of that. I don't know. Do they have a? Tell me a bit more about the company. MK. Yeah. So they have a wallet app.
Yeah. So they have my favorite wallet app, actually. You know, even before I started working with them, I was kind of using the app more, and it's just a really nice Bitcoin wallet. It makes it very easy to keep track of your transactions. It has a really nice directory of merchants that accept Bitcoin in your local area, so you can, you know, activate your location and say, you know, what places nearby take Bitcoin, and you can find those places. It's really slick, really easy to set up, and we're going to be rolling out some cool stuff with the app. Eventually, we're going to add buy-sell functionality, so you'll be able to buy and sell Bitcoin within the app, and it's really cool. They're really operating on the principles of decentralization, and you know, they don't hold any of your funds. It's kind of like they're kind of trying to be the Uber of financial services. You know, in the same way that Uber doesn't own cars, Airbits isn't owning any kind of funds. And yeah, there's some really cool stuff coming out, and I'm really happy because they have a lot of their ideology is really in line with the core principles of Bitcoin. One of the reasons Bitcoin is so cool is because governments can't stop it. You can't stop the protocol. You can't stop people from sending Bitcoin from one place to just about anywhere in the world. And they kind of proved this in Cuba recently. This was a very interesting thing that happened. And the cool thing about technology is, you know, as governments crack down on populations and stuff, eventually technology leaks out to people, and it really can't be stopped. So I'm not trying to say that, like, oh, technology is going to save us and all of this stuff, but people, the more people communicate and the more communications, for example, get decentralized and people can communicate all over the world, like we're doing right now over Fiendphone, the more people can realize, hey, you know, there are things going on around the world that I could be a part of, and, you know, what's going on here? What's going on in my local area? You know, is my government being just, or, you know, am I under certain restrictions that maybe I shouldn't be? You know, why do we have these kind of cultural norms and things like that? So you kind of start questioning things when you can kind of get an outside perspective of where
you
are.
That's true. And you know, politics or ideas, so I'd rather say that, are very important in technology, because they cannot go after everybody, but they can go after the big fish. And there's been BitLicense. There's been a BitLicense project that unfortunately passed in New York. And you know, as long as companies keep understanding that decentralization is key for this kind of technological tools, so we'll be able to get more freedom and be aware that we can do more by ourselves. And I think that's happening with this. And
you and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just judge. Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, F-E-E-N-P-H-O-N-E.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Meow, meow. Freedom Fiends coming back from the market.
Hey, and this is centralized market.
Yeah, the really, the freed and the really free market where we're rebels. And we're the Freedom Fiends. And here's Dan. And here's MK and Hugo from south of the border with me. And we were talking before about Bitcoin and Airbits, which is your new job, MK.
Yeah.
And, but probably our listeners are, there's probably someone out there who hasn't heard, this is the first time they've ever heard about Bitcoin. So why don't you talk a bit about Bitcoin, MK?
Yeah. So Bitcoin is fascinating because it's a digital currency. It's an alternative currency, but it's also a protocol. So it's a currency that you can send over a network. And the network is decentralized so that it can't be stopped by any centralized organization like a government or a corporation. So this is really interesting because it allows you to send value from anywhere, just about anywhere in the world, to anywhere in the world where you have internet access. And this is great because it's allowed for a lot of really great charities to come up to help people, but it's also just allowed for a really, really interesting experiment in currency to take place. This is something that hasn't been attempted before in history, and in a lot of ways, it can be really liberating to people because when you have financial empowerment, you have a lot more freedom to do other things, and there's no kind of authority that can stop you from holding that value unless you lose your password, you lose your private keys. It operates on something called cryptography. So, basically, the simplified version is it's kind of similar to PayPal. If PayPal had its own currency, except that it can't be stopped, by a corporation or a government.
Yeah, there isn't any Bitcoin central bank or bounced mm-hmm. checks or canceled cards. You are actually holding the value of that digital currency, and if you lose your key, then you've lost your money. But that's the price of freedom sometimes, and that's. Some other way of saying it's magical money for the internet.
Yeah, magical internet money.
Some people say that.
Yeah.
People
say that too, and it's kind of cool. So I recently started working for Airbits, which is AIRBITZ. If you're interested in looking up the company, they're really cool, and they make wallet security really easy, which is kind of interesting because when I first got into Bitcoin, you had to be extremely careful, and you still do, depending on what application you're using. You have to be very careful with your passwords, and you have to choose a very strong password. And if you forget, if you forgot this password, then you wouldn't have access to the keys that hold your funds, so you would lose your Bitcoin also. And a lot of people, they want something that's easy to use, and people aren't the best at remembering passwords. So we're used to forgetting passwords and saying, hey, I forgot my password. Can you reset it and send it to me by verifying my email address? You couldn't really do that with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But But Airbits has kind of designed an interesting phone app to get around that. There, you basically set up a PIN number, and you can even set up password recovery. So you set up a password and a PIN number, and then if you forget your password, you can set up, you can answer a series of security questions to get that password back to gain access to your funds. So, this is really cool. They make everything easy.
So probably if you have the same phone line and you have access to your phone, that kind of proves you are who you're saying you are and you could get it back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how it works? Okay.
It's a lot easier. Even people who are kind of familiar with online banking, for example, will find it very, very easy to use. And even if you're not, I mean, it's a very... very accessible app, and it was recently used to send the first transaction from the U.S. to Cuba.
And that's I find that fascinating and wonderful. And you know, there used to be a time when you could probably have a real non-government money in your hand, but it was in the form of it had metallic value, was gold or silver or platinum, or maybe copper. But yeah, you had it on your person, and that would be a risk. And let's say you live in one of these rogue nations with tyrannical governments like Cuba is. And I'll tell you a bit about that because I've been there. And well, if you are using crypto, you can always, you know, you can do a better job of hiding your wealth. Because sometimes you gotta do that. Sometimes you gotta hide your wealth, and let's say you're transporting it too. Yeah, and transporting it. Maybe you can leave the country and go back into it without being afraid of your gold or your coins or your certificates being confiscated in the airport. We've all been through that, and you know, when you're there, you practically have no rights. They can search through your stuff. And they can, if they deem you have a too large an amount of money, they will try and confiscate you or actually succeed in doing so. When you go into Cuba, because I've flown into Cuba, I think Americans are now on the verge of being able to travel to Cuba if that's not already the case. But in I traveled from Mexico a couple of years ago, and yes, you feel... I mean, you're there, and it's like the Cuban TSA, and they can actually go through your stuff and ask you what that's for. Maybe they're thinking you're trying to help some activist, and they will confiscate a computer, or, you know, there's that danger. And so Cubans, now they have access to a different form of wealth. Let's say you're a Cuban entrepreneur, and you have a business, and they're Marxists, so they don't like businesses, they don't like people to amass any kind of wealth and use it to produce stuff. So they will, as soon as you have a large amount of wealth with which you're making purchases and sales, they will try and confiscate it. And that's a way where it's not only wealth is not only sitting there, but it's actually producing more wealth. And now they can do it thanks to Bitcoin. So I went there in Cuba, and I went there to help some activists. And at some point people just give up, and there's just the activists doing the work. People have a job which pays very, very little, so they're always trying to get by, get some, obtain some dollars, work as a tourist guide, whatever they can do to get a couple dollars from tourists and earn their living that way, which is, they earn about $17 a month. That's the equivalent of what they earn in their own currency. Yeah, they're very, very, very poor. So there's some people who are doing work with computers and they're barely accessing the internet. It used to be for tourists only, and now the government is putting up Wi-Fi access points for people to use. Well, you should always be aware. Imagine that MK, you had government access points around the city. Oh wait, you do. You do in America in some places, don't you?
Yeah.
Probably. Would you trust that?
No, I'd be very suspect of that. But you know, it's that's what they have. It is pretty cost prohibitive too. I'm reading this article that I brought up. It's like $2 an hour, and they're saying that the average Cuban salary is about $20 a month. And you said earlier it was like 17 or so. So yeah, probably like anywhere in between that. And that, yeah, that's pretty that's interesting. But but it is one of those things. I mean, it's a glimpse into what can be. It's a glimpse into the future. And, you know, I'm curious to see what innovations come. Right. Mm-hmm.
That's the price of public goods. You know, they will start offering you free stuff. But when everybody, when everyone else has the new stuff, they will claim it takes a lot of effort and a lot of money to bring the internet to you. And since nobody but the government can get it to you, they will sell it really, really expensive. I remember it used to be close to a dollar to send a regular SMS message between, you know, Cubans using their feature phones, because there weren't any smartphones. So yeah, that's people were actually, the government was after people who had satellite TV antennas, and they were taking them down. So people would put those antennas inside their homes, or under, I don't know, behind the hanging laundry, or somewhere where the government wouldn't see they had the ability to watch foreign TV. And I think the same thing is happening with the internet. People, I'm pretty sure there are probably a couple antennas out there with that in satellite internet access, which is not the best, and it's really expensive, but not for them. So yeah, now they have access to dealing in bitcoins, and they're not the only country. And that's, as you were saying before, that's a glimpse of the future. That's what's going to happen with all public goods. You can say, okay, it's just a post office. Just imagine that everything in the country is provided in the same way that that mail service is. Mm-hmm. We don't want that.
You leave me out of this.
No.
Oh, welcome back.
I was about to say, where's Dan?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Dan?
Sorry, my socialized internet's just started to kick up there. I was having a bit of trouble hearing you, but I'm better now.
Don't you have caps? Don't you have internet caps in many Europe, in many European countries? You have the DSL, but you can only download so many gigabytes.
That you can get unlimited. Like, it depends. I think it depends on where you are and who you're with, sort of thing. I don't know that much about it, to be honest, but I do think it depends. I know that I've got a friend who he has limited to how much he can download per month, but it's based on where he is, to be honest.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
And do you have public telecoms there?
There used to be British Telecom that was the big nationalised industry, and that was up until the 80s. And then, you know, Thatcher happened.
And then Thatcher happened.
Put that on my tombstone.
Right.
Let's go to the free market in telecom.
No Thatcher.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Trigger warning.
Trigger warning, yeah. Forget about that. Trigger warning, yeah. Should be careful.
Trigger warning, California. So Sully will be moving to San Diego, and I am incredibly stoked about it. So I hear a lot of libertarians and anarchists being like, oh, yeah, oh, California is socialist paradise kind of thing. And, like, you know, I get it. I get the certain strains of leftism and progressivism can be super oppressive and not good in a lot of ways. But I come from the panhandle of Florida, which, at least where I'm at, feels a lot like a theocracy sometimes. So, you know, I'm ready for a change of scenery. You know, I'm ready for something.
You'd rather have San Francisco than the theocracy you're in right now.
I mean, I want to check it out, you know? Yeah, like, you know, I'm a little libertine. You know, there's a little libertinism in my libertarianism. I mean, it's all right. You know, yeah, I've always been kind of weird for this area anyway. I mean, and it's very different from a lot of the country. I'll say that. Like, it's very different. And so I'd like a change of scenery, and I'm excited to get out there and try something new. And whatever state you live in the U.S., you basically have to kind of look at which freedoms you value, because they're restricted in different ways. So Florida, you can have guns, right? Like, cool, you know, it's relatively easy to get guns and permits to concealed carry. And that, you know, that's great if you're into that, I guess. And I carry, I mean, nothing wrong with that. But there are certain other freedoms that are restricted that, you know, aren't restricted so much in California. And, you know, I'm a believer in both, you know, all the freedoms, I guess, not both, but like all the freedoms.
There's all the deal with community standards, even though things may not be illegal in Florida. You will be, if you get a different lifestyle than what the theocracy recommends, you'll probably be shunned or, you know, may be made to feel uncomfortable around.
Yeah.
I don't know, around people in Florida. I've heard that there's a, it looks like the 50s up there with, probably because of so many retired people moving in, they make it a more conservative place. But
yeah. Well, in this area it is. So Florida's interesting because it's like three states in one, depending on where you're at. South Florida is different from Central Florida, which is totally, and they're both totally different from the panhandle, kind of Northwest Florida, which is where I'm at. Northwest Florida is closer to the rest of the South. It's similar to Alabama or Mississippi. Southern. It's a lot more Southern. So you do see a lot more kind of religious types, and you see a lot more pushback against certain things. For example, there was an abortion clinic in town, and it eventually got burned to the ground just a few years ago. And actually, it's been like a 25-year siege on this place by religious extremists. Back in the early 90s, they attempted to bomb it. And then in the mid-90s, they assassinated one of the doctors and severely injured one or maybe two of the nurses.
So we're talking full lynching here.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, and then just a few years ago they burned it down. So this whole, like, it's so funny when I hear people talk about ISIS and like, oh, these religious extremists, they're trying to kill people and they're persecuting people and all this stuff. It's like, you mean the ones like down the street that like burned down the abortion clinic? Like, I live around religious extremists, like violent religious extremists, like not somewhere. Like the. Yeah, they're like, there's like the rocking out for Jesus ones, and then there's like it can get intense. It can get intense sometimes. I'm not trying to bash all religious people, because there are a lot of cool people here too. But yeah, no, it can. There's been a lot of violence, you know, from that side of things. And I'm ready for a different scene.
Isn't that kind of awful as well? How, like, all the religious people I know are really peaceful and cool people, and isn't it awful that they all get tarred with that same brush sometimes?
Right, right. Yeah, I know a lot of cool ones too. Yeah, yeah, it is.
I don't have any of that in San Diego. None of that. A lot more Catholics, Mexicans there, for sure.
Hey, as long as people aren't violent, you know, they can believe what they want to. I mean, Don't push it on me, so.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Worms. We'll be back.
Hey, this is Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Estos son los Freedom Fiends, transmitiendo desde el cañón iónico de baja órbita del campo de reeducación libertario, en la cima de la plaza financiera bestial en el satélite artificial Leaper 2017, en la región de Alpha Centauri. And this is Hugo from south of the border. I have to remind you that the Freedom Fiends is covered under a Bipcot No government license, which allows reuse by everybody except for governments. And with me is MK Lords and Dan Green. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Doing great.
One of these international fiend shows that we like so much. Well, at least we, the participants.
We're breaking barriers.
We're
disregarding borders with this show right now.
That's the way to go about it. That's the way to go about it, you know, and not... Not just talk about demolishing or bringing down the borders. Just do it. Just do it with Fiend Phone and with radio shows across all lands and all nations. And that's a way to do it. And what was the old saying? If podcasts or if radio shows don't cross borders, armies will. So we're rewriting that one for us.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. So we've talked about Bitcoin in the first hour and about that internet philosopher we don't like that much, which is Stefan Molyneux. But we should go into lighter things. What do you say, MK and Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always up for that.
Let's talk about happy.
Let's talk about TV shows. What do you say? I'm psyched about a TV show. It's a new TV show that we were in, and on the second season. It's called The Strain. It's a zombie vampire science fiction New York thing. It's produced by this famous Mexican director, which is Guillermo del Toro. There's Guillermo del Toro. I don't know how to say it to make it sound American, because you know the whole name is Spanish, but. and you know what I've noticed, and this probably been talked about before on the Fiends, that it's very hard for a producer for a screenwriter to push a story where the government actually do any kind of beneficial work or are the heroes of the story. In this case, there's an outbreak. I'm not giving anything away. There's no spoilers here. There's an outbreak, and there's this plague of semi-vampire zombies. You know the series is about that from the first chapter,
from
so they're vampire zombies, like they're both
they're
at the same
vampires.
Time?
Yeah, they're vampire. They're vampires, but there's a lot of them, and they get it's contagious, and they swarm you and make you into them. So it feels like a zombie story, even though they're nominally vampires, which follows a great tradition. Actually, the first zombie movie, which is I Am Legend, or the first zombie story, is actually about some kind of vampires. So these zombie vampires, which I call them, you know, because of this, I call them zombie vampires. Because it's not Count Dracula or anything, or Nosferatu.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of transformed people chasing you at night.
That's way scarier than hordes of zombies. Hordes of vampires? Like, they're way more cognizant and they can live forever.
And they have a hive mentality, which is a good story for a storyline for a villain. There's this one great vampire, and they all, you know, they have a mind, a collective mind. So, so the CDC gets involved, and there's another, there's a rogue character, which is a pest control agent. In he has a badge, but he's pest control, chasing rats and everything. He becomes a vampire hunter there, and I like it because one of the characters is a CDC doctor, and when the CDC gets involved, they basically make the whole thing worse. They do nothing or do worse than nothing. It's trying to calm down people when the actual plague is going on. So that's what you get now. In some years ago, they could get away with that. They could get away with the government doing some being the heroes and coming in and save the day. I don't see that going on anymore.
Wait, can I just ask, like, so they're vampires, right? And there's hordes of vampires. Now, see, if they attack you, do they kill you or do they make you into a vampire?
Both. That's why there are zombies too. They kill you, and then you transform.
Oh, you reanimate into a vampire.
And some vampire stories, it's like only the privileged people get made into vampires, if you know what I mean. Like, in some vampire stories, it's only the people they choose, and they just kill the other ones, so it's kind
there's
of interesting.
There's a bit of that. Yeah, there's a bit of that, because some of them are really zombie-ish. They have really they don't talk. They just growl and go around in four legs. And some of them are chosen ones, like you were saying. They are the conscious, attractive vampires.
So
not really
how
attractive
does,
if you watch the show.
How do you get to become one of those vampires instead of the, like, drooling, dragging zombie vampire?
It's not yet clear, but at any rate, they will choose you. It's understood that they have to choose you. If they just feed on you, you become a zombie.
So it depends on how hungry they are that
parallels.
Day.
No, probably if they see potential in you for being a vampire, a chosen one. So, yeah.
I always wondered if a vampire would see potential in me if they would look at me. No, son, you'd make a great vampire. I'm going to hire you right now.
I believe in you.
You could build the case, you know, audition for being a vampire. You just don't just drain me. Try and make me some, make me one of the chosen ones. Yeah,
yeah. I so I really like this experience.
I don't know if any of you seen the movie Pan's Labyrinth.
Did you see that one?
Yeah, it's by the same director, the producer of the series is the same director. Yeah, and he has this strange fear of thin, white, wrinkled things. You know, there was this horrible thing in Pan's Labyrinth, the one who had his eyes on his palms.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that when you said Pan's Labyrinth. That's
horrible.
The thing I thought of. It was horrifying.
Yeah, it was horrifying. He ate a fairy and all that. And yeah, some of the vampires look like that. So I was wondering, I don't know, it might be some early trauma. I'm going to play Stefan Molyneux right here and say probably he ran into his grandmother while she was showering. I don't know, something like
that. Well, actually it's that his mother was an emotional vampire. So he's just projecting that at one in physical vampirism. And sometimes the emotional vampirism is so strong that you drain them until they're just this lifeless vessel of a zombie vampire.
Okay, you know what's fascinating?
I just made all that up.
See, just what you said, though. Like, see, if you read the Satanic Bible as written by Anton LaVey, there's a whole chapter on what he calls psychic vampires, and it is that kind of thing. So it's funny how you can actually find that in the Satanic Bible.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't there a bit of that in Michael's book? Manual for the Human Experience. For the Human Experience. See, there's a bit of mosquitoes or leeches. I don't remember exactly what the he's probably jumping in and correct me.
And that's so the thing, common theme, isn't it? Everyone knows someone like that, so you would expect it to. It's probably come up way before the Satanic Bible, and a lot of different things could expect that, because like it doesn't matter like where you are, everyone knows someone like that. It's a very common experience, I think.
Yeah. Oh, it's a real thing.
Every culture, also, there's a legend of such things. In every culture, you know, a vampire-like thing, creature, or even where there's no bats, they will have some kind of mythological creature that will suck you dry. Probably people have the same experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that about like stories and fairy tales, things like that. Like you keep, if you read a lot of like even mythology, and then say take like folk and fairy tales, and there's always these same themes that keep coming up over and over and over again. And it's obvious that they're the important ones, because like that's what makes the stories still relevant. That's why people still like them, because they're still dealing with things that people still deal with. It's relevant to right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of these TV shows that are out are reduced to the same themes that have been for centuries now. Mm. The formula still works. The cop show formula still works.
Yeah, even the most hardcore anarchists will enjoy a cop show now and then, right?
That is true.
I did like a lot of cop shows when I was a kid. Like, but I liked a lot of Law and Order. But I wanted to be a lawyer for a while, and I thought that I wanted to be a lawyer because I like to argue. And then I found out that's not really what it's about. But I would get pumped up about Law and Order. I'd be like, man, they're just going in that courtroom and they're just, you know, breaking it down. And now I watch those shows. I don't watch them very often, but if I'm around like relatives or something hanging out, like I'll come across them, you know, see them. And I get mad now. I'm like, no, don't let him in your house. Tell him he needs a warrant. You know, no, you don't have to talk to them. Don't tell him anything, you know?
I used to watch this show. It was called Hunter. I guess it was about well over 20 years ago. But he always would ask you, he and his partner would always ask you to come into your house. And people would actually ask if he had a warrant. And he said, okay, no, I don't have a warrant, but I can get one and come back. So everyone would cave in and let the cop into their house. So...
Right.
So I don't know.
At least stave him off. Bad. You know, you can know. Make him get the warrant. Make him take the time. Because, you know.
I found the phrase in Michael's book. It's called Serenity Vampires.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So there was a vampire reference in Michael's book.
Serenity Vampires. That's kind of cool sounding.
You can see how they come up with. Like with things like, well, you can see how people come up with ideas like, even take anything, like you could take the idea of a vampire, even you could take the idea of like Frankenstein. I'm talking about the monster, not the doctor. I feel that I have to make that point.
Frankenstein
is the doctor and not the monster. But it's
you have
like
to.
Because it's coming up with something like supernatural to describe something that's very real, and like it's it hooks in your attention. But then even if you don't really think about it when you're younger or a child or something, you sort of, if you don't think about it consciously, I think on some level these things, they always kind of, they just gel in there, because you know if you know what I mean, like you know that like these things exist, like the idea with Frankenstein, man, it's about loneliness.
You have them on your subconscious anyway. So they're there, getting to come out as a story. Totally. Freedom fiends sucking the statism dry and spitting afterwards.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
And I'm Green, then K Lords, and with Hugo. In Mexico. And I was actually, we were talking about cop shows kind of before the break, and I was actually telling you guys about, we were talking a little bit about cops, and there used to be, I don't know if they still are, I don't have TV anymore, but I used to have TV here in the UK, and we used to have these kind of, these shows that were like Cops, but they didn't have nearly as much of the access or nearly as much of the budget. And basically what they must have did was send two guys with like two cheap cameras out into, you know, town centres, you know, up and down the UK, mostly in England at night, and watch cops wrestle drunk people. It was good for like one episode, it was kind of funny, but then after like right. five series, you were like, yeah, it's still just cops wrestling drug people, you know, and you get the occasional good one, but that was about it.
So instead of cops, was it called like constables or something?
There was one that was called like police camera action. I remember that one.
Yeah.
there was actually they made different ones with different names, and some of them were like beat cops and things like that. They all had daft names. I remember the funniest thing I actually thought, the only one that actually was kind of interesting, was I remember the police caught this guy one time and he was having a pee on the street. You know, it was after a club and that. And it was in this place in England, and instead of, like, usually they fine you and they charge you for indecent exposure for some reason, but instead of that, basically the police waited with this guy until a wee sort of local council guy came along with like a mop and a bucket, you know, a guy came along in a van, and then basically the police gave the mop and bucket to the guy who was peeing in the street and watched him clean it up and then let him go. That's an interesting approach.
Huh. Yeah, there you go.
Much more peaceful.
Much more peaceful than beating someone up over drunkenly peeing on something.
Give the man the opportunity to clean it up.
I've never been able to understand the indecent exposure thing if they're only exposing themselves to the wall.
But then, exactly, but then see if you were to, like, you know, pee yourself and you're walking down the street covered in pee, they'd arrest you again, surely, because they'd think, well, this guy's on drugs or something. So you can't really win, can you?
No, you can't. That's really weird, because I don't know, what does that prove? You gotta pee somewhere. At some point, you peed. That's not a case.
You know, yeah, you have to. Legalize free peeing, okay? Okay, have you guys heard of that? This is going to be, it's about to get weird. Have you heard of the free bleeding thing?
Yeah.
Trigger warning, menstrual trigger blood. So this woman actually, like, she ran this marathon to raise awareness about the lack of feminine hygiene products for women, and she free bled through it, which means she ran the marathon without any feminine hygiene products. And like, I got totally mixed feelings about it, really. Like, I mean, okay, so you're raising awareness about something, but you're wrecking a perfectly good pair of pants, and and it's like a hygiene thing. Like, why? There are other ways. I don't know. I just feel like there are other ways to go about that.
What was she trying to prove? I don't know.
She was trying to raise awareness about it, but I don't know that that was the best way to go about that. I mean,
we all went.
I'm sorry, I don't want someone like that sitting on, like, you know, things that I might be near, and I don't know.
What I'm saying is, everybody's aware that that's a thing. We all went through fifth grade, sexuality class, and we all, there's changes in your body, and we all know about that. What's there to be aware of?
Well, that some women, like homeless women and things like that, don't have access to feminine hygiene products. And so I don't get the whole. Yeah, I don't get it. I think it was a good stunt, though. You know, if the aim was for publicity, it worked. You know,
Katie kind of mentioned that to me, and do you know what put me in mind of? Do you ever, have any of you guys heard of the band L7? They were sort of around the 90s and that.
Oh, yeah!
Festival, wasn't it? Yeah, the lead singer, what is it, Donita Sparks, I think her name was, she threw a used tampon into the crowd.
Yeah!
But I think that was more out of frustration. I think there was, like, problems. I think it was more out of frustration.
They were heckling her pretty hard.
Than making any kind of statement, but it was a weird one. See, stuff like that, Katie's got no time for that. She's just like, nope, done, finished.
Hey, you know, sometimes you're just having a bad day and you get so frustrated you gotta rip your tampon out and throw it at someone, so... I don't know.
Should make a movie about that. They made this one with the Day of Rage. What was the one with Michael Douglas where he goes... He just flips out. And,
oh, and...
Yeah, the same but with tampons. Just go ahead and have
falling down.
Falling down. Yeah, there you go.
Let's go to the market.
Tampon down.
I had to get it before the break. I was like, I love that film, but I went blank for a second. And I was like, what?
So much truth, it hurts.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
I'm so glad we're on the radio so we can't be heckled. I'm so glad I don't have to throw a tampon at someone.
That's why there's no calls.
That's why there's no calls.
In case you're wondering,
what's the verbal equivalent of that? Like...
The verbal equivalent of throwing a used tampon at someone? I'm not sure there is one.
I don't know that there is one. I don't know there's one that's allowed on radio.
Use your words, MK. Use your words.
Use my words.
We were talking about hecklers, actually, because during the break. You know, I think we sometimes assume that people can hear what we're saying during the break.
Yes.
We were talking about hecklers, and heckling's an interesting thing. I was talking about sort of a British band called Throbbing Gristle, who basically invented sort of the genre of industrial music. And one of their tracks in their first album is just basically the lead singer shouting at an audience. You know, the audience are all chanting off, 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 and he's like, you've got nothing to say, and you know, and there's words I can't see on radio involved in there. But it's almost kind of like that as well. I was thinking about that, it's kind of like that on YouTube in a way as well, isn't it? Because, you know, like people like to put up a video and then you suddenly have all these hecklers, and most of them also have nothing to say, funnily enough. So it's like they're shouting at people through the internet.
Right, right. Well, you know, especially when it comes to comedians or something, you're not going to best these people. They're funnier than you, and they can drink more than you. And when you're drunkenly yelling at them, you're just out of your element. You're just not going to win. And the power dynamics are just not going to work out for you. But it is hilarious to watch. I love watching YouTube clips of different comedians just shutting down hecklers. Doug Stanhope is so great at that. And Joe Rogan, we were talking about him earlier. He does some really, really funny takedowns of hecklers. So
it's got to be done, though, you know, because, like, I don't even understand the motivation for heckling, to be perfectly honest. I mean, understand the motivation for positive heckling. but I don't understand the motivation for negative heckling. You know, I assume there's some reason. Like you actually said to us in the break, MK, you said, like, there's some reason why that guy's on the stage drunk and you're sitting on your chair shouting at him drunk.
Yeah.
There's a reason that you should explore.
Right. There's a reason he's on stage and you're not. So shut your trap. It's great to see comedians doing that, because bands get heckled a lot too, and they don't always get to have that comeback. You know, people yell Freebird at them. Like, just about, like, I've been to quite a few shows, and yeah, there's a lot of times there's just that jerk who yells Freebird, and it's like, dude, it's not funny. It wasn't funny the second time it happened. Why are you doing this? But this one time, a friend of mine appeased them. This musician, a lot of libertarians know him, Jordan Page, and he played a really excellent cover of Freebird to appease this person. This person was yelling Freebird at him, and so he plays this really awesome cover of Freebird and kind of kills it. I mean, it was like pretty impressive, you know, for Freebird. It's like, all right, you know. So sometimes you can go with it and it works, but most of the time it's just like,
Freebird without a full band.
Right, as much as you can do Freebird without a full band, but he did all right, you know. So But yeah, hecklers, I mean, you gotta put them in their place.
There was a show here, it was at King Tut's, which is quite a famous club in Glasgow. Like, that's the club where Oasis were discovered, put it that way. And, like, there was this guy, there was this band, actually. It was called, this band called The Warlocks, who are a kind of modern sort of psychedelic rock band. And I remember this big positive heckle because it was all quiet in between songs and there was, like, you know, guitar tuning and stuff and sorting something out. And this guy, just this random big guy in the crowd, and it's a tiny club, he just went, "Come on, ya! Word I can't see on radio. Emote!" Like that. And that was like the majority of his heckle. The whole place just started laughing then. Emote was all he wanted them to do. He just wanted them to emote. Apparently it's to portray emotion in a theatrical manner.
Right. That's an oddly specific heckle. Like, he really thought about that one.
That's all he
put some effort into that. I just want to see you feel, man.
I come to this club to be moved.
Show me your feels. I want to see your heart. It's like the sweetest heckle ever.
But he put in a word I can't even see on radio, and I'm not sure why that word was in there, because it just seemed like he was trying to give them a bit of confidence.
Aww.
I'm not sure why he needed the profanity, to be fair. Although he was a really big guy, so nobody questioned him on the profanity. It was just like, yeah, no bother.
Right. There you go. Sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it drives that, you know, deeply thought out point home. I don't know.
Hugo, do you not have any good heckling stories?
No, I was trying to find if there's such a tradition here or something that I've lived through, but actually I think there isn't any of this. I was reading up on the story of Freebird because I'd never heard it before, which was...
Are you guys just polite in Mexico?
I think people get very excited. You know, have you ever heard of this? When big name bands come to Latin America, Brazil, Mexico, they always say they love the audience and people are very, very engaged. And I don't know, probably it's just the fact that they don't come here that often. But yeah, people don't do that. People don't heckle bands. I think that's probably because we don't get them that often. You know, it's just the usual, I don't know, couple times a year festivals, even in a very large city like Mexico City. It's only a couple times a year where big name bands come in. So I don't think I have a heckling story. That's a new phenomenon for me.
Well, that's nice, man.
That just means people are polite and decent, civilized, like concert goers.
Well, why would you pay? Why would you pay a ticket to go and hassle somebody? That's what you were asking before. You know, it's it takes a lot of time and effort and money to go to just, I don't know, get the tickets that will get you closer to the stage and just so that the artist can hear you. So, yeah, I'm not sure I understand the motivations. Sometimes people just want to be famous for a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that happens.
That's I don't true. Understand negative heckling either. It's like, you know, I don't even understand what people think in their heads. Like, if they think, well, I could do a better job, that's why I'm not up there and I don't own any of that equipment. And I don't know how to play any of those songs. And I've never written a song, but I'm quite confident I can do better. You know, it's like kind of like that. We have it in sport here as well. The amount of times I've been to pubs and seen big, fat, drunk guys shouting at football players or soccer players, because we're on American radio, you know, shouting and screaming, going, he's terrible, get him off the park, he's awful. You know, this guy's on, like, his fifth pint of beer, you know, yeah. And he's really fat, and he's criticising that guy for some reason. And it's even worse when you actually go to these games. You know, you see these people literally, you know, really so close to the players, screaming at them, and the players have to just pretend it's not happening. But you're like, they must want to go over and just punch that guy and say, look, I train like all week and you come here on a Saturday afternoon and shout at me.
That's part of the fun and part of the game. We have a lot of. Armchair quarterbacking or couch quarterbacking?
Yeah.
What's the expression? Yeah. We have a lot of that, with obviously, with soccer. Mm. But yeah, that's a thing. That one is... Very.
I knew you would have that one.
It's soccer after all, or how we call it here, football. The same way you say football in Scotland, right?
Yeah. Just we're on the same page with that. We understand. It's just those Americans that don't understand. You know, the rest of the world gets football.
We have to have our special words for everything. Because America, so.
Because America.
Because America. We don't speak English. We speak American. American. So, I don't get the affiliate, the sports thing either, honestly. Like, I don't know. I've never really gotten the whole, like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, feeling like people are kind of like a part of the team, or feeling that they can even give, like, professional advice to these athletes, or not professional advice, but, like, spewing out their opinions as if they're based in some kind of, like, professional experience
about the sport. People who've never played it.
And they feel like their opinion really matters, you know, like, because these people get really serious and they actually see. And then we have, like, the kind of call-in radio shows here. Like, I know they have them everywhere, you know, like, and they just basically, you know, people call in and get angry about games. And these people think, well, you know what? My opinion when shouted at the TV didn't make any impact. So I'm now going to phone a radio station so lots of other people can hear my ignorant opinion. Like, and it's like they really think this matters. Like, people need to hear what I think.
I didn't know those shows even existed. I mean, they have a daily 2-hour shows about football here. So I'm not being a fan. I'm not sure what they talk about in 2 hours, even when the season's off. So I don't know. They follow the Champions League. I don't know. They follow some other league, whatever team is playing in some other country. But yeah, but they don't have the call-in shows. I'm thinking it's because there's probably been bad experience about people calling and cussing all over the place, so
yeah,
people get very passionate.
Right. It'd be nice if you could channel that passion into something constructive, or, like, you know, against things that are actually harmful. Like, people riot over sports games. I mean, people, like, break stuff and hurt people because their team lost. And that, to me, is just, I can't wrap my mind around it. It's like, you can get that worked up about your sports team that you're not even physically connected to or in any way connected to or affiliated with loses, but, like, you know, your country bombs a bunch of people overseas, and that's, like, okay.
Well, because your country, like, whatever, is your team.
You know. Yeah, right. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But yeah, well, it's disappointing.
It's like there's like accepted places to heckle. Like if you went to see like a play or the ballet or whatever, you wouldn't expect hecklers, you know. But it's like there's a special, like, even when I was a child, my mum said that language you hear at football stadiums, don't repeat that.
Right, right. It's okay, yeah, you never see someone like heckling a ballerina, like, yeah, trip, you know, don't nail that triple pirouette. Fall down.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Freedom Fiends, we lived our whole lives as nerds so we could one day be cool on the radio. I don't know, maybe.
Worms to that, yeah.
So we're talking about how funny it was. So we're libertarians. This is the International Libertarian Fiends episode. And we were just remarking on the break that we're libertarians, all in different countries, different ages, and we still do not grok sports and sports ball. And I just thought that was really funny because it's like, oh yeah, we all got picked last for kickball, didn't we?
Yeah, major nerds here, you know. You gotta invest the time and start reading up some Rothbard, and that's a nerdy thing to do, sure. For sure.
Right. Think for yourself, I'm a suave, kind of dapper fellow, you know. You could just tell.
You just strike me as a dapper fellow.
Whatever the opposite of dapper is, that's probably me. I don't know. If anyone knows the opposite of dapper, we don't have a phone line, so there's nothing you can do about it. You'll just have to sit there frustrated, man, that you know and I don't know and I'm the one talking and you're not. Heckle me.
There you go. Heckle away. Oh, wait. You can't.
The Freedom Fiends anti-heckling system. Right. The anti-heckling force field is in effect.
Yeah, they can always go and heckle somehow in the comments. So you could visit the website and in a controlled manner try to heckle.
I like how you said
we heckle the hecklers. Like,
let's not invite this.
Right. We heckle the hecklers, the would-be hecklers, but they have no power because we don't give that to them. So
because what's the point? Do you know what I mean? Like, what is the point? There's just no need for it.
It can be sometimes fun. It's amusing. It can be very amusing.
And you
but
want to hear more
can be also be amusing to like hit the delete button, like take that. Like,
we should pioneer constructive heckling. Like, you could go to gigs and you could say, you could like shout something like, "I think the key change was unnecessary in the last verse."
That bridge was a little too long. You could have cut it back.
Three encores. Who are you trying to kid?
See, that guitar solo, though, on point.
Like the kind of thing that, you know, if you've ever seen in those Hell's Kitchen shows, like that Gordon Ramsay does, it's like all the time he's shouting and swearing at people for cooking badly. And then occasionally goes, "Hey, you, come here. And the person kind of meekly trots over and he goes, "That's beautiful." And it's like, why do you need to scare him? Right. Poor guy.
You know, it's weird for like a cooking show. You'd think it'd be really unhygienic to have that much sweat near food. Like, he's just like dripping, like... I don't know. He grosses me out, like, looking at that. I don't know.
There's a British comedian called Mickey Flanagan, and he was actually talking about, I saw him do a show before, and he was talking about Gordon Ramsay, and he was saying, like, he said, if I was there, I would say, Gordon, calm down. We're not sorting out the Middle East here. We're just making a bit of dinner.
We're just making a better dinner.
Just a bit of dinner. That's fine. We're just making dinner. Again, well, he actually, and that's heckling as well, because Gordon Ramsay is heckling his staff. So then that's surely a form of heckling, except it's like top-down heckling instead of the bottom-up heckling that we've been talking about.
Well, it's kind of like the most intense form of heckling, because he's like right there in your face, and like it's not like there's a distance separating you where you have like a microphone or something and, you know, you can talk over them. He's just like yelling at you, like right in your face, and like you're already under a lot of pressure. I mean, that's, I don't know, it makes for good entertainment though, so... But that would be, I don't know, that would stress me out. Like, because you're like on television and the guy's yelling at you. Like, I get freaked out if someone's just yelling at me. And I'm, you know, especially when I was trying to cook food or something. I've worked in restaurants that were like crazy busy and, you know, people yelling at each other and like, you know, doing whatever. And that's already intense. But like having cameras around, nah. So.
And how many times have you tried to do a good job and then your boss walks in and stares at you and then you suddenly can't do it anymore?
So much.
Sure,
so
that happens so much.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we didn't need redemption in the third act because we didn't need to be redeemed. I feel like we killed this last hour.
It's all been redemption for 1 hour. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Positive heckling.
That's what we're going to inspire. Positive heckling. Positive heckling in the comments.
Constructive heckling.
Dan, be more audible. Dan, we can't understand you. I can just see them coming now. Dan, what is it you're saying?
Use your words.
Use your words. Dan, it just sounds like noise.